Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You are listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast brought to you by Birmingham Live.
Oh, well, I'm definitely in a good mood this evening as I'm singing along to the theme tunes. We wait to go live there. You've got a Christmas tree up. You've got a nice Villa shirt on. Villa have got 3 points against the Albion with a 3-0 win that should have been four, but we'll come on to that. Happy days, mate.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to see Aston Villa win away again.
Yes, again.
Sunday night, say, for the future.
Can we launch a petition that Villa have to play every game on Sunday night now? I don't know, I've not looked in front of me, but Liverpool was Sunday night, Arsenal was a Sunday night, I think Leicester was a Sunday night as well, so it's not bad. Get us playing Sunday night, 7 o'clock, all we can. When we first started the season like that, I was like, oh, working Sundays, working late on a Sunday, that's a bit rubbish, but if Villa keep winning games, mate, I'm all for it.
Yeah, it was, well, I say never in doubt, I think it probably was in doubt. At some stage, well, I don't think it was in doubt, to be honest. I think it was a comfortable win. I think the sending off, you know, we'll get to that properly, the decisions in a while, but I think the sending off actually helped Albion a little bit because it gave them an excuse to kind of sit deep behind the ball and then just try and spring a very, very rare, very occasional counter-attack. But yeah, I mean, I didn't see the last two goals coming in the last 5 or 10 minutes, but
no, me neither.
Neither did I see Villa throwing it away at that stage, to be honest. We're so greedy, but we just think of the points we've dropped.
I know.
Do you know what I mean? Brighton, West Ham. You know, could have the league title sewn up by then. Remarkable, isn't it?
Yeah, the turnaround is unbelievable. I know we talked about this so much, but I mean, I posted on Facebook this morning about El Ghazi at the Hawthorns and the brace he got there last year with the rocket, the second goal, and how much he enjoys playing for them just as a bit of a, you know, jokey getting started into the day. And you think, oh, that feels like a lifetime ago. That was only like last year. And then this season, the last season, but this year in 2020, Villa were rubbish. We all know how poor we were at one point this year, months ago. And we sit here and say it all the time, the turnaround that Villa have gone through in the last, what, 3 or 4 months. I keep mentioning, don't they, on BT and Sky when we play, oh, Villa stayed up on the last day, let's not forget. Like, that's remarkable how good we are since then. Like, we have to keep talking about it every week. So I still can't quite believe it. I'm waiting for the game where we go, that start Villa had, it all faded away and now we're back to the Villa we know. This is a new Villa now, we're actually good.
What year is it now? Is it still 2020? It's
still 2020, mate. I know.
And Villa were in the Championship in 2019 for the first half. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. That feels like 10 years ago, doesn't it?
It does feel like years ago. No, you're right. But I think people are right to remember that Villa stayed up on the last day of the season because, you know, the transformation is spectacular, really. I think, well, I've just tweeted, Villa racked up 22 points now. From 12 games, it took them 23 games to get to 22 points. It was when they got a draw, when we got a draw down at Brighton. Christ knows what year that was. but it just shows, and you know, I think you were saying it's face Chelsea in a week's time and currently level on points. Is that right? I've not looked at the table closely, level on points, but with a game in hand.
Yes. So, I can't put the table up because I've got something else prepared. But yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Because you look at the run of fixtures and we looked at Burnley, Albion and Palace. What would we like there? 7 points probably as a minimum. 9 is on offer. Obviously, we dropped out to Burnley. So we can still get 7. I'd still be happy with that. If we extend it back to the Wolves game as well and include that in there, beating both Wolves and Albion, which can be a little bit banana skins because they're derbies. Draw against Burnley isn't bad because we still created and made chances. We couldn't buy a goal against Burnley, and now we've scored 3 today, and again, it should have been 4, possibly even more. And you go to Palace, who have just been absolutely battered by Liverpool, and how they'll react to that. And then you look ahead to Chelsea, and normally you look ahead to those big games and think, oh, Chelsea, that'll be difficult. We'll see what kind of Villa turn up. We'll see what Chelsea do. And then you look at the league table and realise that we're level on points. We've got a game in hand. Goal difference is, I think, they're one better or we're one better. We're actually good now. So you don't write these big games off anymore. You look ahead to Man United on I think it's either New Year's Day or the 2nd of January, and you think, yeah, why can't we go and get something there now? And that's what I like that Dean Smith and his team have installed in that Villa side now, that we look fearless against anybody. I know it's only Albion and all the rest of it, but for large parts of that game, you think this might fizzle out as a 1-0, or Albion will get a cheeky counter-attack or a horrible free kick or a decision. They're going to scrape a 1-1. That's what old Villa probably would have done, and we'd have crumbled a little bit. But we go on and, like you said, get two goals in the last few minutes that you don't see coming. And that Bertrand Traore goal, what's happened there? Because as soon as he hit it, I've gone, thinking like he's just had a little P-roller to Sam Johnson, like we've seen El Ghazi do against Burnley. And it's this lovely, tidy finish that seemed to fool everybody. I don't quite know how that's actually gone in. When they watch the replay, like Sam Johnson's just like hands on his hip watching it go in. I don't know how that's happened.
I think it's probably the standout moment of the game, wasn't it? It was a cracking finish. And I think the thing that's encouraged me, both against Burnley and again tonight, is that we worried, didn't we? And I'm sure we still will worry when Villa get injuries and there's people missing.
Yeah.
And they've been without Ross Barkley, and they've been without, you know, Ezri Konsa tonight. Battered Burnley 0-0. If you can batter somebody 0-0 without Matty Cash, without Douglas Luiz. I was glad to have those two back in tonight.
Yeah.
I thought Cash was just relentless as well. You know, he's just such an athlete. Yeah,
very good. Very good.
But, you know, he's a complete fullback for me with, you know, all parts of the game. He can defend, he can attack. I think he's an England international in the making. You're going to tell me now he was born in Delhi or something, aren't you? But I think... Yeah, I think
he's Poland. Matty Cash can register for Poland as well.
Can he?
Yeah, I think it's something like his grandmother on his mum's side or something is from Poland, so he can technically register for Poland as well.
Well, that's good knowledge. Well, thanks. Sign him up quickly, Gareth, because we want him playing for England. But yeah, I thought it was wide areas tonight. Villa were brilliant, weren't they? Combination down the left.
And positions that we've been worried about, left back, target, is he that great? Right back over the seasons is a position we could probably improve. Matty Cash has come in and, like you said, has totally done that. Further forward, El Ghazi, does he do enough? Traore, he looks okay, but very one-footed. Is he not quite sure? And then they have these moments like tonight where you think, yeah, actually, you know what? They are decent footballers. And as much as, obviously, you weren't on the last one, but me and Max talked about El Ghazi and the kind of abuse he got on social media that Tyrone Mings stood up for, and then after the Burnley game we're kind of going, it's a bit of a coincidence, but we're highlighting El Ghazi again because he's having these chances and not doing much with them. And then today he looks not like a world beater, but it looks a different player to what he was the other day, and he gets that early goal. And the one he's had towards the end of that game when he's cut into the edge of the box, rolled a ball past the player and then took a great shot against Johnston, that's the kind of El Ghazi that we want to see more of. I think it is, like Max said on the last episode we did, he's very much a confidence player, and you'd hope now that him and Traore both got that bit of confidence to stay in that side. And a comment's just come through about Ross Barkley. We all thought he might be back tonight. If he's back for Chelsea, obviously he can't play anywhere because of the loan, so he's not going to be coming back until at least he could be coming back for Palace, couldn't he, and then miss the other one. But you think now how he comes back into that side and what happens to one of El Ghazi or Traore. It's very annoying they've both got TR at the start of their names, but it will change, doesn't it? And that's a good problem to have, I guess, rather than looking at it and going, well, Traore comes straight out because he's been rubbish. Barker comes straight in. You now look at it and go, well, actually,
difficult.
I don't know, mate. I just want to keep saying the wrong thing. But yeah. You talk instead. Get this out of my mouth.
What I was going to say, and let me not fall into the same trap now, is that 2 weeks ago, we'd have said of those three wingers that Trezeguet would have been at the front of the queue. And, you know, even though he's missing a few chances, we've noticed the improvement this season. We've noticed his work rate, his energy. But now, you know, we can wait for him to be fully fit again, can't we, when we've got two other wingers in Traore and El Ghazi are fit. So, like you said, it's really nice problems to have. And I think this was going to be the big test for Dean Smith. Like I said, when the injuries and the suspensions came knocking, could he still field a competitive 11 that were going to go and win games? Now, I think for context tonight, I think West Bromwich Albion, I don't want to say they're going to be the whipping boys of the division, but I think even with Big Sam in there, you know, trying to make them meaner and more stubborn, I think they've got one hell of a battle to stay up. And I just heard the commentator say that Big Sam can't wait until January. I don't think he's suddenly going to have a massive amount of cash to spend. Say again.
Is he having some time off or something? He's not going to get any money to spend, is he, in January? What's he doing? Right. Is he going on holiday or something?
Well, see, and I think Villa kind of, you know, I was expecting a tougher game tonight than Villa got, you know, with a new manager effect. And I thought maybe it would be a banana skin, but that early goal, you know, put Villa on top.
Yeah, massive.
Straight away. And then I suppose we might as well talk about the sending off that was and the sending off that wasn't, hadn't we? What were your thoughts?
Well, first of all, when you mentioned that early goal, I think that was key to changing the game, because the longer that goes on at 0-0, that plays perfectly into Sam Allardyce's hands and Albion's hands, that they'll draw out the game and then they will maybe nick something on the counter, like a bit like Burnley could have done, you know, drawing out the game to be 0-0. So that early goal was massive and really changed the outcome of the game. The red card that was for Livermore, I agreed with it being a red card. I think that is VAR being used in the correct way. Because initially, when I first saw it, I was like, he's lunged in there. The actual contact to where he comes in and hits Grealish's shin or wherever it is, he's quite low down, but he's kind of coming over the top and lunged his leg. So I thought, in real time, I thought that looked like a red card. Gives a yellow, he's advised to go and look at it, changes his mind, and is sending off correct, I felt. Do you agree?
I thought it was one of those, I do agree, I think it was a red card, but I thought it looked worse in real time than when it was slowed down. When it was because he lunged and he, I think we'll come to the Courtney Halls one in a minute, but I think it was the intent and the lunge that has done Livermore there. But
yeah,
in real time, you saw the lunge and you thought that looks a little bit. When they slowed it down, it looked a bit weird. It looked like he kind of went over the ball but then bounced off the turf before he hit Grealish. I think he only clipped Grealish, but I think it was because of the. It looked like he lunged. I think that's what's done for him. So I think it was a red. I think the other one was a red as well.
Do you? That's interesting. Yeah. I was about to say maybe this is some Villa bias that I'm going to go, yes, Albion red card, Villa not a red card. But I didn't think the Courtney Hawes was one. I think that was just a bit of a coming together.
I think it was, I don't think the intent was there, but I think it was still dangerous. So I don't know, perhaps I'm just trying to sit on the fence because I live slap bang in the middle of West Brom Villa territory and lock them back to West Brom.
I'm glad that we disagree because I'm being a bit biased in Villa's favour, thinking, oh no, it's not a red card. Courtney Hawes didn't mean anything by it. I'm a little bit concerned, by the way, I haven't heard anything so far about Ezri Konsa, just being he was out ill for Burnley. He's obviously not featured again tonight. I don't know whether it's still the same illness. Obviously, it's only a couple of days ago. I don't know what that illness is. And I don't know for certain, but Mings, was that 5 yellow cards for him now? Does that mean he misses Palace?
Oh, I don't know. You can't just put me on the spot like that. Go on, Soccer Base.
We can carry on talking. If anyone can confirm that, or Dean Smith's mentioned it, when they put up about his yellow card, I definitely remember seeing number 5, but his shirt number is also number 5. So it could have been that. Like, I've got a feeling that could have been his 5th yellow card. And if it is, he misses Palace. And if it is, if Konsa's still not back, Hawes and Engels playing centre-half.
Engels was back on the bench tonight, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was back in, but I mean, throwing him straight back into Crystal Palace, I'd rather not do that, to be honest.
What I would say is, you know, I know 2 minutes ago I was advocating him getting sent off, but Courtney Hawes has come back and played in two games. So, like you say, you probably wouldn't want your two deputies in. But I don't know. I think this is what we've said earlier and what we've said all season. It's a squad game, and it's up to the likes of Bjorn Engels. You know, we keep harking back, don't we, to the last time he played, over, you know, that game against Tottenham, and then he coming close to scoring an equaliser at Wembley. You know, Courtney, if Bjorn Engels has to come in, I mean, has anybody told us yet whether the tour?
I mean, this is
speculating about nothing here.
This is the perfect example of doing things live and having no research. So Ian Robinson said it was three Mings for yellow, three yellows for Mings. Martin also says it was three yellows. Then Neil says that Mings is out. And then Martin says, no, he's okay because it's 10 cards because it's 20 games played. But I don't, that's not true either. So we don't actually know. People are saying that Mings isn't out and it's only 3 yellows. So let's not sit here and start a campaign saying that Mings is out because it seems like it isn't.
It's 3.
Is it 3rd?
3.
Okay. All right, fine.
3 well, I'm just yellow Mings.
As you're talking about, you know, it being a squad game, that would hit us hard, wouldn't it? We've already had to deal with...
Well, it would, but you're talking hypothetical nonsense because he's not a factor now. So
I don't know. It just got
let's move on. You and your scare stories.
Fine, we'll move on.
Birmingham fail.
Okay. Oh, as if I just snorted on the podcast. Right. Two comments I wanted to go to. Somebody talked about Jack Grealish, and I've totally missed it now, saying how good was... Oh, here we go. From Alan Tatton, who says, how good is Jack Grealish? He just gets better and better. Now, I'm at risk of alienating myself here on a Villa podcast, but I thought Grealish was poor tonight. Or not poor, but by his standards, I don't think he did anything great tonight. He had a few couple of runs and a few little combinations with Watkins or El Ghazi. But overall, when we're used to seeing Jack Grealish do 8 out of 10 performances and leading Aston Villa, tonight I think I felt like things bounced off him a lot. Am I barking at the wrong tree here? Am I going to get a few
in the comments? It's really bad, isn't it, when Grealish's performance level just drops to a 9.5 out of 10. Just,
and we still win 3-0. But maybe that's my point, that we're so used to Villa being reliant on him, not this season, but in previous 2 or 3 years, that now I can watch Jack Grealish and go, oh, he wasn't that great today. I think he looked better in the second half. First half, I didn't think he did much. And Villa can still go on and kill a game off and win 3-0.
Yeah, but he's, you know, what was it? He's still an 8 out of 10 tonight, isn't he? I think.
I don't know. Well,
I think so. He's still drifting past players like they're not there. He's still getting to the byline and creating chances. He's still, you know, he's still the heartbeat of Villa. I think that what's happened is that he's not a one-man show anymore. He's got a cast of stars. Yeah, alongside.
The comments are rightly abusing me, so thanks, Villa fans. Lucas says he wasn't at his best in first half, picked up in more in the second, which is what I said. Jack Pancake, great name, if that's a real surname, says Grealish is capable of improving from recent displays. Thomas says, what? Grealish created 8 chances tonight, which if he did, fair, but that seems like a lot. Marcus says, oh, controversial, which yes, it is controversial. And then Thomas says, Grealish was unreal, man. That's harsh. So, I mean, it's a game of opinions. I'll just look at Jack and think he can certainly do better than he did tonight. Maybe I'm being harsh on him, but I don't know. It's just weird. I just noticed a few times a ball bounce off him or him playing a heavier pass than he usually would and just think, oh, that's not the Jack Grealish I'm used to. So that maybe it doesn't necessarily mean he's had a bad game. It's just he's not as good as I know he can be.
You're a really tough
out of a hole here.
I thought he played well. You know, okay. Can he play better? Yes. But is tonight the time to worry about it when we've won 3-0?
No, I just thought it was an interesting talking point.
About El Ghazi's penalties?
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll talk about... Well, yeah, I mean, El Ghazi's such a strange player. After the game that you went on, me and Max did Burnley, and we were talking about, he has these chances, but he either... If he gets a nice strike or a nice bit of power behind it, it's up into row Z. And when he puts it on target, it's a P roller. Whereas then you watch him today and think, oh, he's actually a decent player. And it was a good penalty. Did you think it was a penalty, first of all?
Yeah.
I thought it was a bit soft again.
Was it a penalty? Yeah. Let's get my biased hat on there. I think he's giving him a little nudge. And you know that if you give him a nudge, he will fall to the floor, or he will be propelled to the floor by the bullying tactics of the opposition. I think so. I think, what was I going to say? I've gone blank, mate. I think it was just about a penalty, but it was emphatically dispatched. I do like seeing penalties go in at that end of the Hawthorn.
Oh, yeah, good memories. Again, as if that's the last time we played at the Hawthorns. It seems like we would play them again since then, but we were in different leagues last year, so obviously not. But it seems like such a big period of time between tonight and the playoff semi-final.
3 sendings off for Albion in the last 3 games against Villa. Yeah.
I already know the answer to this. Dwight Gale, Chris Brunt and Jake Livermore.
Exactly. I still love that little photo of Dwight Gale sitting on the steps in the tunnel at Villa Park. I think someone put some Kermit music to it in the back, in the, over the back of it in the past. But yeah, I thought it showed that Villa, and I'm tempting fight now, making a rough moment back, but Villa are a top 12 team this season. West Brom are a bottom three team this season. That much was clear. Go on, you talk.
I thought you were going to say something else. I wanted to look at the away games. We talked a little bit before about Villa's turnaround in form. Away games specifically, we've played six, obviously. Won 5 out of 6 away. Puts us the second in the form guide for away games only. So only
that one that we lost, we should have got a draw out of.
Well, yeah, exactly. What's this turnaround with? Because like last year we were reliant on getting most of our points at home if we could. We weren't picking up many points at all. Like we said again, going back to the one we did after Burnley, and it feels like they're all, every podcast in this period of time is all like the same anyway. But we were saying a little bit of perspective required. When we went into lockdown, we were on 25 points. We're on 22 now. Like you said earlier, we're way ahead of where we were last year. There's absolutely no, I'm absolutely tempting fate here, but it would take an absolute disaster for Villa to be involved in a relegation scrap this season now. That's surely impossible. So the turnaround from that last year to this is incredible. But the away form is something that we've fixed massively. And I don't really know how they've done that. I don't know whether that's a byproduct of there not really being a home and away because of the lockdown restrictions. But when you look at some of those results there, 3-0 against Fulham, 1-0 against Leicester, 3-0 against Arsenal. Is that correct? Is it 2? No, it was 3, wasn't it? Yeah. And then West Ham, like you said, we should have got a draw there. And then 1-0 to Wolves and 3-0 to West Brom. Clean sheets throughout all of that as well, apart from West Ham. Like the turnaround for our away form is incredible.
No, it's like you said, I think it probably is a bit of that what's home and what's away anymore. You know, if you think about, I don't think Villa's home form is terrible, is it really? You know, they lost at home to Leeds. Southampton just pinged everything in the top corner that day. Obviously, we know what happened against Burnley, where they kind of tried to kind of pepper the goal, but couldn't stick it away.
2 wins, yeah, one draw,
you know, a bit of VAR controversy again. So I just think, you know, yes, fantastic. 5 wins out of 6 away. Villa are a better team with better players, with probably less pressure because they've already got early points on the board, with less pressure because they haven't got a baying mob of us lot shouting at them from the stands. So I can't emphasise it enough. I thought this season, and it still could be, I thought this season, if Villa finished with 6 more points than last season, would be a success. If Villa now finish with as few as only 6 more points than last season, I think there'll be a spectacular. It will take a spectacular collapse in the second half of the season. So it's just that little bit more quality and belief, isn't there? And the players who were kind of, I don't know, learning their trade the hard way in the Premier League last season, and I'm probably talking about, I know Matt Target already played in the Premier League, but I'm probably talking about Target, Douglas Luiz, Konza, have kicked on. So not only have we brought more quality in, but that quality and that little bit of experience seems to have rubbed off on the players last year. We talked, didn't we? We talked a lot last season about them not being streetwise.
Yeah,
I think they've got a little bit of that now. I think they kind of know the beast of the Premier League now and feel that they belong there. And we've seen that with the performances and the results.
And also, part of that, Dean Smith and the coaching staff, they've had a year in the Premier League for the first time as well.
Yeah. And yet we still hear about Bielsa being the man, don't we? I love the fact that Dean Smith sneaks under the radar. You know, we've done our big Dean Smith special earlier in the year, haven't we? And said, what would it take for Dean Smith to leave Aston Villa, you know, in terms of his own career progression? And we said that it wouldn't, would it really? The only thing is if England come knocking one day, if Dean Smith is ever in line for a job like Man United or Liverpool, then to put himself in the frame for that job, he'd have to get Villa into the Champions League. And once he's got Villa into the Champions League, why do you suddenly want to go and disappear for Man United and Liverpool? So I don't think he'll particularly want any of the plaudits or whatever. He'll just want it to keep ticking. And from thinking that Villa were doomed, was it the Everton game when our mate El Ghazi spooned one over the bar from the yard? I think, you know, go back through our clips, I think that was the game when we got our head in our hands more than ever. Or probably when we lost.
I think we spent most of the podcast like this, didn't we? Kind of just sat waiting to get out of there.
So at that moment, Dean Smith, even a glass half full positive disposition, Dean Smith would have thought, maybe my Villa days are over.
Mm.
For him to look at this now and go into, you know, 2021 with Villa in such good shape, you know, full credit to him, his coaching team. So far, the recruitment team. I mean, we'll get stuck into January, I'm sure, in good time. But do you think Villa need to or will do much business in January?
I think they might do something if the right deal becomes available. And that sounds like I'm now the manager trying to fend off a press conference question. If we find the right deal, we'll see what we can do. I don't think they'll actively
You're only going to bring somebody in if they're better than the players you've got. Is that right, Gavin?
Yeah, I don't like to talk about opposition players because we only like to talk about our own players. That's what they'll always say. I think, like I say, if there's something there and they go that you can't resist putting 20 million in for whoever, like the Emi Martinez one in the summer, he's too good of a player who's available to say we don't want to be involved in that deal. So I think if something like that happens, which doesn't often happen in January, Villa will do something. But I don't see them looking at it going, we need a striker, we need a midfielder, we're going to go out
probably
and find.
We need a striker though, don't we?
Well, I don't know, do we? I don't know. What's wrong with Ollie Watkins? He should have two more goals on his tally for a start.
Well, I'm not kidding. I'm just saying scratch beneath the surface again and Wes still not ready.
Beyond the squad, but I don't know whether January is the time to do that business. I think because also if Villa are still doing well in January and will hope to continue throughout the rest of the season, they're not going to change the side they've got now anyway. So if you're not going to bring somebody in January to improve the first team, you might as well wait and do that business in the summer.
Oh, I agree. I mean, listen, hopefully by the end of January, Villa will. How many points now? 22. You know, let's hope Villa, I don't think they can quite get to 40. Probably could between now and then, but let's hope that Villa, to me, if you're going to invest big money in a new signing or several new signings, it's got to be to make significant strides in the Premier League. So, you know, for Villa to justify a 30 or 40 million pound spending spree, if you like, in January, they've got to think that will kick us on three or four or five places. So I still think they might try and go for, you know, a better version of Samatta. You know, if there's a striker available on loan, perhaps in January, you know, from one of the European leagues that can, a bit of a kind of no risk deal. I think they might do it, but I don't see the point in them spending massive money unless they think it's going to have such a massive effect on their overall position. Yeah. And I don't think one player would do that now.
I totally agree. I just want to wrap up by mentioning that VAR thing, just because it won't be a Claret and Blue podcast without us talking about VAR and that Ollie Watkins decision. What did you think about it, first of all, before I go off on a little tangent?
I thought, like most goals, I refused to celebrate it. Because there's nothing instinctive about celebrating goals in the Premier League anymore.
What a sad sentence that is.
It's true though, isn't it? And it's one of those ones again, isn't it? You know, it's the kind of, it's the width of a gnat's armpit hair again, isn't it? You know what I mean? And do gnats have armpits?
I don't think so.
It's one of those, isn't it? You know.
But it's onside. It wasn't offside, was it?
Say it again?
It wasn't offside, was it? We keep saying it's one of those. It was onside.
I don't draw the lines, do I? Do you know what I mean? I'm not.
I mean, just stop the park, draw the lines. I mean, this is the thing, right? So this is my thinking during the game. It happens with Ollie Watkins in both situations, West Ham and obviously tonight. With West Ham, they pore over it for 4 or 5 minutes or whatever it is. A couple of different angles, drawing up the line, zooming in, all this stuff going on. And part of me looks at that and goes, well, this is taking too long. This shouldn't be how it is. It should be faster. Then tonight, though, you look at it at first glance and think, well, he's level. So it should be the benefit to the attacker. It's a great goal as well. It's a good move, even before the ball comes in from Matty Cash. It's a good finish.
Great little pass from Traore, or Trezeguet, as you call him.
Yeah. it's a good move. It's a good goal that should stand. And then they look at it from one angle that's not even parallel with the defensive line anyway, draw two lines down from Watkins' boot or arm, whatever, and the defender's arm or boot, two lines down, and it just comes up at the bottom saying offside, and it took about 20 seconds. Now, part of me looks at that and goes, yes, VAR correct, speedy, that's how it should be. But how come they look at one that's so tight for 4 or 5 minutes and then one another one that's so tight and you go, yeah, it's offside, 20 seconds. This is the clear and obvious thing that I don't understand. For that red card situation we talked about earlier, he gives the yellow card, they watch it back and go, actually, that's a red card, we've changed our mind, that's now the correct decision. It was a clear and obvious error, the ref got it wrong, it should have been a red card. But then you look at the goal, if you watch one replay and he's a foot offside, you go, oh, obvious error, offside. But if you look at it in his level, why are we even drawing these lines in the first place and not just going, oh, well, he's level, so the striker gets the benefit? Why is that not the rule?
Yeah, I've got this vision of, you know, like security guards, when you see them in films and they've got this bank of cameras and they just like fall asleep and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think someone's it's like that.
I think
that's a Stockley part, you know, they've just got a few cans, a few pizzas lying around.
And maybe because it's Christmas. Maybe they've got no staff there at Christmas or something, or maybe the guy who's on his last shift before he breaks up for Christmas, he's going, oh, God, tight offside decision. I can't be bothered drawing all those lines. Just get offside, move on. Villa will probably win anyway. And in the end, it doesn't matter. It mattered against West Ham because that's drop points. Tonight, we've gone on to win the game 3-0 comfortably in the end anyway. But it's still annoying. And for Ollie Watkins personally, he should have two more Premier League goals.
I think I feel more for him in this context than I do about Villa. Villa won the game 3-0. I'm less angry when we've won a game than if it's cost us a draw or a victory. But we know it, don't we? It's part of the game. We don't like it.
Right.
You know, is it going to go anywhere? I bloody hope so.
So do I. We'll wrap it there because I'm going to get carried away. Nice Christmas tree you've got. It's a bit blue, though, for my liking.
I don't think it is blue. I think it's just the way my kind of moody ambient lighting in here is. The lights are blue and yellow and red and green. A bit too much tinsel on for me, but I don't think you can see the tinsel.
No, I can't. It just looks very blue. I'm just hoping there's not any Birmingham City shirts under there or anything.
I don't think so, mate. If there is, I'm going to abandon my family.
Yeah, spare a thought for those poor kids opening a Birmingham or West Brom shirt on Christmas morning. Poor, poor children. But this is our last episode, or last live episode before Christmas. So we've got 500 people who've watched us all the way through. I think there's a few opposition fans watching tonight, so big shout out to those who have got nothing better to do on a Sunday night. Big shout out to the Villa fans who watch and actually care what we're talking about. That's very much appreciated. And it's been a good year, as much as 2020 has been, I can't say what I want to say, but been rubbish. For the podcast, it's been good fun for us. Villa stayed up. We've had good moments. So this is our last live episode. We'll be back on Boxing Day, I think, for the Crystal Palace game. But we're also recording a Christmas special that will be out. I mean, we say Christmas special. It's as much a Christmas special as Die Hard is a Christmas film. It's just another podcast that's coming out at Christmas time. There's nothing Christmassy about it, really. We're recording that this week, and that will be out on probably the 23rd of December. But this is our last opportunity to say goodbye to people and Merry Christmas. So thanks for joining us this year. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas, Matt, even though I'm going to speak to you again before this, but just for the sake of the podcast.
Merry Christmas, Dan.
I hope you enjoy it. I hope it's a good one for you. But yeah, thanks everyone who joined us, and we really do appreciate all your support.
I've got your Secret Santa. I'm going to drop it down. I'm not dropping it down tonight. I'm going to drop it down tomorrow morning. I think you'll love it.
Well, I've already give you yours, and I'm not sure you'll love yours, so we'll see. All good fun. I mean, you say Secret Santa, but we both know we've gotten each other, so it's not a Secret Santa, is it?
Well, secret present.
Yeah, secret present. That's more accurate because we both know that we've got for each other. But yeah, Christmas podcast will be out on, I think, the 23rd of December, so stay tuned for that. We know we've not done it yet, but it'll be a good fun to record. I'm looking forward to it. And we'll be back on Boxing Day. So thanks, everyone, for tuning in this evening live on Facebook. Thanks for all your support this year. Thank you, Matt, for joining us with your blue Christmas tree. And we'll see you again soon.
Thank you for listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, then please let us know. We love hearing your feedback. We'll be back soon with another episode. Until then, up the Villa!